The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Coming up today, we're going to do some questions and answers, and I'm going to answer some questions about 2,000 mules, about geo-tracking, about missing video surveillance, and also the absence of down-ballot fraud. And then Debbie and I are going to talk about some news of the day, including the big Supreme Court decision on concealed carry on Second Amendment rights. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Show.
Needs this voice. The times are crazy. In a time of confusion, division, and lies, we need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
Let's go to our first question.
Hey, Dinesh. So two quick questions. The first one, you said Republicans did pretty well in 2020, but it was Trump that lost. So my question is, you know, if those were illegal ballots, you know, why do you think, you know, Republicans did well? I mean, why not go all out and just make them all, you know, Democrat ballots and then just make it more sweeping? So that's kind of a question I have, is why only Trump and, you know, people would vote for Republicans otherwise. Secondly, regarding those two women that were, or those two people, I think they're women, that were arrested in Yuma, Arizona. They're arrested for trafficking. So it looks like upon reading it, they just collected them illegally and deposited them in a Dropbox. I don't think there was anything that alluded to multiple Dropboxes, you know, 20, 30, 40 a night or anything like that. So far, it's great that they were caught, but nothing about multiple Dropboxes. So again, that the volume of fraud doesn't appear to be there, at least in those two cases. Thank you.
Yeah, these are both really good questions and already of a higher caliber than some of the so-called fact check issues that are raised that I've been answering on the podcast. Let me deal with them one by one. On the issue of the down ballots, we raise it in the movie. In fact, I myself say that it is an argument against fraud that Trump lost, but down ballot Republicans did pretty well. And so that is put out there for people to recognize in Act One, in the very opening minutes of the movie. Now, sometimes when you have a theory, you're able to sort of go back and apply it to puzzles that were there at the beginning, and it immediately resolves them. But at other times, you have a theory that doesn't speak to the issue. And I think this is a case where the argument of 2,000 mules or the evidence of 2,000 mules doesn't really resolve how that anomaly occurred. And here's what I mean. It is possible that the altered ballots or the fraudulent ballots were voted Democratic all the way down. They weren't just votes for Biden, but they were votes straight down the ticket for Democrats. And so even though there was fraud to that degree, to the degree of the cheating shown in the movie, in Trump's case, the fraud was enough to defeat Trump. So Trump lost Georgia. But the fraud was not enough to change the down ballot outcome. So some other Republicans in places like Arizona, Georgia still did pretty well. Now, obviously, we know in the runoffs there was a bad outcome for Republicans, but that was a separate election. So the point I'm trying to say is that without retrieving the ballot, if we could retrieve the ballots, we could answer this question decisively, right? Because if we could retrieve the ballots, we could look at them and say, hey, here's a ballot where apparently this person, this ballot delivered by a mule only has a vote at the presidential level, let's say Biden over Trump, but no other votes are voted. And then we would know that the cheating occurred only at the presidential level. And by the way, that's not inconceivable. It's not inconceivable that the Democrats go, listen, Trump is the Nazi. Trump is Hitler. We can't possibly take the risk. Now, the rest of it is too complex, and it's, the operation becomes too complex. We would then ultimately have to deal with all the votes, not simply for candidates down ballot, but also perhaps referendums and other types of things that appear on the ballot. We don't want to deal with any of that. We're simply going to focus on the presidential race. That would not be... There's Trump derangement syndrome, but I wouldn't say that there's Republican derangement syndrome. So you can see why the Democrats might have targeted Trump. But I emphasize the word might because we don't know. Let's turn for a moment to Yuma. Now, Yuma is a very small area. Let's remember that the bulk of the research focused in 2000 Mules is in large cities. Atlanta, Phoenix, Milwaukee, Detroit, Philadelphia. You're dealing with large areas, many drop boxes, and sometimes drop boxes strewn across multiple counties. In Georgia, for example, Gwinnett County, Cobb County, DeKalb County, Fulton County. So it's possible to get in your car and go over three or four counties, you know, hitting various drop boxes. Now, Yuma is not like that. In fact, Yuma would not normally have even been in the study. The reason it was included is that Truth the Vote had done some work there. There was a case in Yuma. There was a woman who cooperated with the authorities who agreed to be interviewed by Greg, so she's in the movie. But in that area of Yuma, there are only two drop boxes. So, yes, it's a small operation. That we're not talking about mules going to multiple drop boxes. In fact, in these cases, these two women, they're more accurately described as mule drivers instead of mules themselves, because they're not going on these mailman-style routes. Their job is to sort of collect and collate these fraudulent votes and then go make a single drop. So it's a little bit of a different situation, but nevertheless relevant to paid ballot trafficking. These are women who were, in fact, compensated, as were people collecting those ballots. But the operation in Yuma is of a different magnitude than the operations described in the other cities. Recently, I told you Walmart canceled MyPillow. They'll no longer be selling Mike's products at their stores. Well, gee, when are these retailers going to stop letting the left bully them into submission? Enough is enough. Mike always has a solution, and this time he's offering a MyPillow pillow flash sale as low as $19.88 with promo code Dinesh. Call 800-876-0227. Don't miss this incredible flash sale and help Mike fight back against these box stores that have canceled his products. That number again, 800-876-0227, or just go to MyPillow.com. To get the discount, you need to use promo code D-I-N-E-S-H, Dinesh. Let's go on to our next question.
Hey, Dinesh, sorry if I missed it. Just a couple quick questions. On those videos where you've got the person at that drop box, does the cell phone data match the exact time of that person that was there? Because then, again, then you wouldn't need video of any other lockbox that person had visited, if you at least had them on one. Because I know one of the objections is that, you know, we don't have any video of one person visiting multiple drop boxes. But again, if that the video that you do have matches the cell phone data, then that's great. And the second question is, I think you also said there's like 4 million minutes of video or something like that. And so it's just kind of interesting that out of 4 million minutes or what have you, there isn't more videos of the same person at different drop boxes. I mean, what other information is on those 4 million minutes of video? So it'd be great to know what else might be there. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm going to answer those two questions in reverse order, because while it's true that Truth the Vote has 4 million minutes of video, it seems like a lot of video. But think about it. If you're getting video from a single Dropbox from October 1, early voting, through Election Day, you're going to have lots of video that's just blank space. You're going to go through the day, you're going to go through the night. And so most of that video is just nothing happening necessarily at all, at least in terms of mules. You might have people coming in and depositing one vote in the Dropbox, something like that. That's fine. There's nothing untoward about that. But to the degree that you're looking for mules, a lot of that video is truly, you may say, empty space. The point is that there was so little video taken compared to what should have happened. The rules call for video everywhere, 24/7. And so that would have been a lot more than 4 million, probably more like 40 million or 100 million minutes of video had they done the job. But they didn't do the job. In Wisconsin, no video. In Maricopa County, there was video cameras turned off. In Yuma, no video, except for some private video that David Lara and Gary Snyder took from their truck, but no official video. In Philadelphia, no video. There might have been some video, but True the Vote hasn't been able to obtain it. And in Fulton County, in Michigan, True the Vote has a little bit of video, but only a little. And in Fulton County, again, very little video. Out of, let's say, 10 Dropboxes, video on one Dropbox. So this now explains why it's hard to find the same mule at multiple Dropboxes, because there's no video at those Dropboxes. But now we turn to your first question, which actually answers the second one very effectively, because it essentially says this. It says, look, the movie can't be blamed for the absence of video where no video was taken. Just like if a burglar goes to 10 homes and only one home has video, you can only look at that home to see if you can find him on the video. Now, the subtle point that you raise is this, and that is that can the video be matched to the geo-tracking? And the answer is absolutely yes. In fact, that's how True the Vote, in doing its geo-tracking, knew where to look on the video. Because think about it. If I have video on a Dropbox, and again, it goes from, you know, let's just say 1 a.m. in the morning on October 1 to November 4th, am I going to sit and watch all that video to look for a mule stuffing ballots? No. I'm going to look, I'm going to do my geo-tracking, and I discover, let's say I find an industrious mule, and he went to 10 different Dropboxes, including the one that had video. And then I know from the phone geo-tracking that he appeared at that Dropbox, let's just say on Wednesday morning at 3 a.m. And then I go look on the video Wednesday morning, 3 a.m., and there he is. And the point that you make in the question is, if you see that, where the geo-tracking is pointing to the video and the video is confirming the geo-tracking, that is sufficient. It's sufficient. Why? Because the video is confirming that the geo-tracking is accurately placing the mule at the various Dropboxes. In fact, you now know with higher confidence that you can trust the geo-tracking at the other Dropboxes, even the Dropboxes where you don't have video. And so I think this is really the point that 2000 Mules makes a dual case. A case that relies on geo-tracking evidence, available, of course, everywhere in all these five key battleground states, and video evidence that is sparse. It's sparse in that it's only targeted on a few Dropboxes, but where it exists, it provides 100% confirmation of what the geo-tracking shows. In that sense, it's sort of the icing on the cake. Some of us wish we could rewind the clock when it comes to our health, exercising, climbing stairs, all the things young people take for granted. These aren't things that have to stop just because you age. Neither do you have to endure the normal aging aches and pains. Now there's a 100% drug-free solution. It's called Relief Factor. Relief Factor supports your body's fight against inflammation. That's the source of aches and pains. The vast majority of people who try Relief Factor order more because it works for them. Debbie's excited. She finally gets to do her bar exercise class now that she's alleviated her frozen shoulder thanks to Relief Factor. Debbie knows if she stops taking it, well, the pain could come right back. So she's like, I don't want to be without this again. You too can benefit. Try it for yourself. Order the 3-week quick start for the discounted price of only $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call 833-690-7246 to find out more about this offer. That number, 833-690-7246, or go to relieffactor.com. You'll feel the difference. Time for our next question. Take a listen.
Hi, Dinesh. I have a question I have not heard addressed before about the so-called January 6th insurrection. Could you disseminate the most extreme outcome? Often the Capitol building is equated with democracy. If the rioters had fully taken over, disarmed all the security, and taken everyone hostage, what would have happened? Would all 50 states simply have surrendered and a mob would have taken control of the whole country? Or what could have happened?
This is a really a tremendous question. And it's a tremendous question because it strikes at the underlying inanity of the claims by many on the left, Democrats, the January 6th committee, that this was an attempted takeover of the government. And really what the question is doing is saying, well, let's see. Would the government actually have been taken over? True, the Capitol building is the place where Congress meets. It is the venue for, you may say, conducting the legislative business of government. But nevertheless, let's say that there is a successful Capitol occupation. And by the way, you can make the point even clearer by ignoring January 6th and imagining an occupation of the Capitol by the left or by the right. So let's say, for example, the Supreme Court issues a decision striking down Roe versus Wade. And a bunch of left-wing activists go into the Capitol. They occupy the Capitol. They make everybody leave. They have, quote, taken over the Capitol. And the question is, have they taken over the U.S. government? Are they now in charge of the United States? Are they going to be appointing ambassadors, concluding treaties? Are they going to be running the United States? And would the rest of the country go, well, you know what? We've got some new rulers in America, and they're not the congressmen we elected. They're not the senators we elected. There's this bunch of goons that went in there and are basically now declaring themselves to be in charge. Well, that's ridiculous. That is absurd. If these guys occupied the Capitol in relatively short order, there would be a police regiment that would surround the Capitol and put on some bullhorns and say, guys, peacefully leave the building right now. And of course, upon leaving, they would be put into handcuffs and arrested. Or we are going to have SWAT teams storm the building. And if you offer forceful resistance, you are likely to be killed. So this is obviously what would have happened. The United States was not in danger of being taken over at the most, in the most outer extreme example. Again, conducted by the left or by the right, you have what could be called a symbolic occupation. We're going to make our presence felt in the Capitol as if to say that we're sending a statement to the country and we're doing it from the most hallowed hall of government. Look, I'm not saying we should have any tolerance for this kind of thing. First of all, the reason we pay police forces, the reason we allocate all this money to the FBI is to be able to prevent this kind of occupation from taking place at all. And it should be prevented whether it occurs from the right or of the left. One of the puzzles of January 6th is how these people gained such easy access to the building. Why were the cops twiddling their thumbs and just standing there, hello, hello, yeah, sure, I'll take your phone, I'll take a photo. So the behavior of the authorities is always important in conveying to citizens what is and is not permitted, what the bounds are. But to come back really to your question, even at the outer limit, the January 6th protesters would have occupied the building, and then there would have been, as I say, a clear warning for them to leave the building. I believe at that point, they would, in fact, all leave the building and the normal business of government would be resumed. So at the worst, we're talking about something that could be delayed. And again, what's on you? We don't expect Republicans and conservatives to do this kind of thing, but it happens on the left all the time. They're always taking over court buildings and official buildings and government buildings. In fact, they regard this as a legacy of the civil rights movement, as something that they're entitled to do. And typically, law enforcement responds with extreme solicitude, extreme gentleness, very different, by the way, than other countries, where if you take over buildings and you have riots, yeah, you're shot. But not in America. And so I think the discrepancy of January 6th is that this was a case where the protesters who went inside the building were treated the same way that third world countries treat their protesters, which is to say, grab them, tie them up, lock them up, throw away the key. But not the way that protesters have been treated, at least not for the past 50 years in this country. Right now, court packing is a real danger to our democracy. Make no mistake, court packing is a coup. And the usual suspects, Biden, Pelosi, Schumer, are working overtime on new radical plans to pack the Supreme Court. Look, if we don't stop them from installing four more justices so they can rig the system in their favor, it'll be catastrophic for our court, our country, our way of life. We can't let that happen, not on our watch. This is why we need you to join us. We're gathering a coalition of 1 million patriots to say no to court packing, no to the liberal agenda, no to the Supreme Court coup. We got Franklin Graham, former U.S. Attorney General Ed Meese, Dr. James Dobson, the Family Policy Alliance, the Heritage Foundation, and over 400,000 people like you. They're all on board. So please sign your name now. Go to Supreme Coup, that's C-O-U-P. Go to supremecoup.com to sign First Liberty's letter. That's supremecoup.com. God bless America. Debbie and I were planning to talk about some issues of the day on today's podcast, but it turns out that we also have a question sort of aimed at both of us. So I'm going to read it, and it is, hi, it's from Patricia. Love you and Debbie. Parentheses, wow, she's smart, not just lively. Honey, you're smart, not just lively. But let me finish. By the way, I should tell you in this context that the very title 2000 Mules, not to mention large parts of the movie and orchestrating how the movie lays out. So Debbie's involved in a lot of this, but we were sitting, let's talk about how the title came by. We were racking our brains. We didn't want to use titles that were sort of like definitive evidence and elections, which is a kind of a radioactive word. We were afraid that might scare the theaters. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So
yeah, so basically, you know, I was like, well, Mules would be good. But then I said, wasn't there about 2,000 of them? And then I go, how about 2,000 Mules? So yes, I came up with the title.
It's a very catchy title because it's out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And in fact, whenever we come up with a title, we search to see if we can get the website. And often the website is taken. And so we won't get Hillary's America. So we need to do Hillary's America, themovie.com. But with 2000 Mules, the name is so out there that we got 2000mules.com. No problem.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go on here. Appreciate all you do. Thought you'd get a kick out of this Dropbox in North Beach in San Francisco. So are we going to show the Dropbox?
We're going to show it to our viewers. Now, our listeners will just have to take our word for it. It's actually, you'll have to go listen to the podcast, watch the podcast on Rumble or YouTube so you can actually see it. It's pretty funny.
But I also want to know how I can stream 2000 Mules and also show it to a friend. Well, so the best place to start is, in fact, 2000mules.com. And that website will link you with the two main platforms for 2000 Mules, the movie. So one of them is called Salem Now, salemnow.com. And on Salem Now, you can rent the movie for 48 hours. I think it's $14.99. Or you can digitally download it for $19.99. The other platform is Locals. And if you want to go directly, it's 2000mules.locals.com. Or you can link to it from the website. And there you can kind of join my Locals community, get the movie for free, or you can just stream the movie. I think it's $19.99, and you can watch it as often as you want. There's also DVDs available for sale, and I think Salem is offering a kind of bulk deal by which you get 20% off if you buy a bunch of DVDs. Kind of a good way to spread the message, not just, by the way, to fellow Republicans and family and friends, but also as kind of skeptical independents and Democrats. You'll be doing very good missionary work if you're able to help us get the word out.
And I just have to say one more thing about how, wow, she's smart and not just lively.
Well, you are lively.
I get that. Well, sometimes, yes. Okay. But I also get, oh, thank you for being such a good wife to Dinesh.
Well, you are.
Thank you for being his support. I love that, don't I?
Well, you actually do those things. You do all those things. But you also do a lot of stuff in your own right. And in fact, it's amazing. Debbie really is you have a tremendous range in the stuff that you know how to do. Even from producing this podcast, when you took it on, you didn't know anything about producing a podcast. And now you're familiar with the processes of advertising. You're technologically pretty savvy.
Well, you know, I think it all came from the fact that I was a school teacher, right? And so I did lesson plans. And so I've always been very, very organized when it comes to like daily tasks and things like that. But I also produce my own CDs. And so the production of things and products also came in very handy for what I ultimately am doing now. So, I did have a little bit of a background in all those things, in mass media and just organizational skills. I also organized events. So that comes in really handy when people want Dinesh to speak at their events, because I give them my 2 cents.
Well, a lot of times the organizers ask Debbie for advice about how to put the event together. Should people have name tags and so on? I also remember we were filming, I think it was Hillary's America, and I left the venue and I came back, and there you were, and you were talking to about 30 or 40 people who had shown up to be extras in the movie, and you were commanding them perfectly. They were essentially at your beck and call. And I think that must go back to both your teaching days
and my performing days
and your days of running Spirit of Freedom.
Right.
You might have noticed it's pretty colorful at the grocery store in the produce section, all those vibrant colors of fruits and veggies. Our friend Dr. Howard at Balance of Nature explains that all those colors you see represent nutritional variety. Different colors signify different key nutrients. If you eat only your favorite one or two veggies, well, you're missing a whole world of vital nutrients. This is why Debbie and I take those 6 little fruits and veggie capsules every day. Each daily dose is made up of a blend of 31 different fruits and veggies. 31, so variety equals vitality. Give your body what it needs with Balance of Nature. Invest in your health. Join me and experience the Balance of Nature difference for years to come. For a limited time, all new preferred customers get an additional 35% discount and free shipping on your first Balance of Nature order. Use discount code BALANCE. Call 800-246-8751. That's 800-246-8751. Or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code BALANCE. Big decisions, of course, coming out of the Supreme Court. And a big one yesterday, the Supreme Court in a big gun case in New York. This was a concealed carry case. And New York required that people who want to conceal carry their firearms have to provide a justification or an adequate reason for why they need to conceal carry. A lawsuit was filed basically saying, wait a minute, don't we have a Second Amendment right to carry firearms? Why do we have to provide this additional justification? And the Supreme Court ruled, you don't. The Supreme Court basically said, look, there has been some minimal firearm regulation as part of this country's history. You obviously can't take a gun on a plane. You can't take a gun into the Supreme Court. You can't take a gun into the halls of Congress. So this is not to say that you can have a gun anywhere. But the court basically said that apart from those specific cases that are anchored in the history of this country, there's local states and jurisdictions cannot add burdens onto the Second Amendment and say to citizens, you got to prove this, but show me to our satisfaction that you were really scared. What did you have to be scared about? The court goes, that's none of your business. This guy has a right to carry a gun. End of story. Mm-hmm. So it's a big win.
It's a big win. And, you know, I have a friend who she's a high profile person in New York. And many years ago, she was actually scared for her life because she did a lot of things that were, back in that time, were seen as anti-Muslim, which actually she was not anti-Muslim. Nevertheless, she was a wanted woman and she lived in New York City and she couldn't get a gun to defend herself. So she had to hire security. And so security had to go with her everywhere she went. And it was because she couldn't get a gun in New York. And I'm really happy to see this because the Second Amendment applies to everyone equally in every state. And I know that liberals just love to go after guns and they like to chip away at the Second Amendment. And I think this is going to actually put a stop to that.
Well, I mean, especially now, because, you know, in the wake of the Uvalde shooting, there's a kind of concerted effort to push for gun regulation.
Well, I mean, look at fake Mexican using
Beto.
I can't call him Beto. I can't call him Robert. I just call him fake Mexican because that's what he is. But anyway, he's using Uvalde to get votes, and he has actually increased
He's closed the gap,
which is ridiculous. People do not fall for it. This guy is crazy. And again, all of these rules or whatever are not going to stop mass shootings. I mean, look at in New York. Don't they have mass shootings in New York? Hello? Hello.
Or in Chicago or anywhere, in other places that have all kinds of gun regulations.
It does not stop a crazy person. Let me say that again. Taking away guns does not stop a crazy person from getting a gun. The only thing it stops is law-abiding citizens that have the right to bear arms not be able to do it.
I mean, you made the point. We were talking about this. Debbie was saying that, you know, if you have a place, let's just say a store that says, you know, you can't bring your gun in. Okay, so a lawful gun owner is going to go, listen, I'm not going to bring my gun in. I'm going to leave it in the car. I'm going to go in unarmed. But obviously the shooter doesn't think like that. He's not going to show up and go, ooh, I see a sign. I better take my gun and leave it in the car. He's going to go, this is fantastic. Nobody in this store or in this facility is going to be armed. And that means I'm going to be the only one who's going to be armed. And that's when all the trouble begins.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I don't have her name, but this woman back in, I believe it was 1979, I want to say, it was a Luby shooting in Texas. And she had a weapon in her car, but she couldn't take it. Back in Texas then, you couldn't carry weapons into an establishment of any kind. And so she left her gun in her car, her glove compartment, and a crazy person went into Luby's and shot lots of people, including her parents, killed her parents. Her biggest regret that day was that she didn't have her gun to stop that crazy man from doing what he did.
And Texas reformed its laws after
it did.
That, didn't
they? Yes, they did. And so anyway, so, you know, this is what really gets me is that these liberals that come in and try, and I shouldn't even call them liberals because they're not liberal, but they come in and they try to scare people into thinking that the gun itself kills, right? And It's not. We need our weapons because, as in the Uvalde case, the police was not there right away. Had a teacher had a weapon, she could have stopped him. I mean, I'm not saying that there would have been no carnage, but he would have at least been stopped immediately, right?
I mean, I think it's very shocking in the Uvalde case when we now learn more about the police. We learn that there were armed police on the scene. And they did nothing. And moreover, they didn't even test to see if the door was locked until they finally battered it down when the full kind of team arrived. So the shooter had a kind of open season for about an hour. And even I think the Uvalde police authorities have now admitted
it was very bad, and it's you know, this case of course was horrific. It involved children, but there are home invasions where the homeowner, if unarmed, is really just a sitting duck waiting for somebody to come in and do whatever to them. Right? They can't wait for 911 to get there. They have to immediately stop the intruder. And in order to do that, you have to be prepared. So do I believe that everyone should go out and get a gun and not learn how to use it? No, of course not. I took training. I know how to use my weapon. I want everybody to learn how to use their weapon because people that are not crazy are not going to go out and do crazy things. And so we need to have a citizenry that is equipped, well-equipped to defend themselves. That's what the Second Amendment was for. That's what the right to bear arms is all about. And I'm really happy with this SCOTUS decision.
I mean, the Supreme Court is doing something very, very good, which is it's recognizing which rights are in the Constitution, the Second Amendment. And it's, I hope, with the abortion decision, going to make clear which rights are not.
Imagine the lifelong impact of a journey to the Holy Land. Surrounded by like-minded travelers, picture yourself stepping foot in iconic locations right out of Scripture. Join Dr. Sebastian Gorka and Dinesh D'Souza on this life-enriching Israel tour, November 30th through December 9th, 2022. For more information, call 855-565-5519 or visit standwithisraeltour.com.
Debbie and I have been talking about an American soldier, a Marine veteran, arrested in 2020, who's been in jail, in prison in Venezuela, and has apparently recently attempted suicide. And you just heard something about that.
Right. So a Venezuelan friend of mine alerted me to this and said, you know, hey, you need to have his mother on the show because his name is Matthew Heath. He has been incarcerated in one of the worst Venezuelan prisons in Caracas since September of 2020 and on trumped up charges. The Venezuelan government is very good at doing that. Apparently, his lawyers say that he was set up, that they found all kinds of weapons and explosives and all kinds of things because they were saying that this was right after the coup attempt in Venezuela to oust Maduro. And they said he was part of that, organized ousting.
I mean, what's interesting is, wasn't he arrested? He was not even arrested in Venezuela.
In Aruba, I believe. They went and got him there. And remember, I said, boy, I guess we better not go to Aruba. Because
Aruba's right next door to Venezuela.
Yeah, and, it's right off the coast of Venezuela. But yeah.
They were accusing him of being a subversive.
Right.
But even the State Department, we're talking about the Biden State Department.
Yes.
They're calling the charges against him, quote, specious.
Yes.
And they say the U.S. has seeking his unconditional return.
Yes.
But I guess part of what his mom is saying is that they're not doing anything to get this guy home.
And, you know, to be quite frank, I knew that once Biden was in office, there was nothing, and I mean nothing, going to happen to Venezuela. They have been doing human rights violations for years. And they have about 8 of our U.S. citizens in their prisons, and nothing has been done. And to that, I blame defense. He was the Secretary of Defense, right?
His name, under Trump.
Under Trump, his name is Mike Esper, and I think Mike Esper tried to stop Trump from doing anything to Maduro. And so we have to, you know, I'm not just blaming the Biden administration. Unfortunately, Trump was not able to do much under his administration in the State Department because they didn't want to go after Maduro. That's when they should have done it. They should have gone after Maduro long ago and gotten that man out of there because we wouldn't have political prisoners sitting in
Venezuela. You know, at the time, and this was during the Trump years, there was a military general in exile outside of Venezuela who contacted Devi. And he basically said, look, there are Venezuelan exiles who are happy to do the work of fighting for freedom in our own country. We're not asking Americans to fight.
Right.
But we
mm-hmm.
do need supplies and support and training.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he was asking for. Can that be provided by the United States?
Yeah.
And as it turns out, the answer was, in effect, no.
Yeah. And he's being tortured in prison. This is, he's been psychologically tortured, physically tortured. It's been horrific. And to that I say, we have our own political prisoners in America as well. So, unfortunately, this is not something that we can say, oh, this only happens in Venezuela. Unfortunately, it is happening in our own land
as well. That is what we would have said 30 years ago in the Reagan years. We'd be like, oh, isn't this horrible? Well, this is what happens in a third world country.
Yeah.
This is the fruits of socialism. But we're seeing the fruits of socialism in America.
Yeah.
We have political prisoners in Washington, D.C. They're being locked up. They're being denied proper food and medical care. Their moms are probably in anguish at the same time. So suddenly we have to become a little bit more hesitant, a little more careful, a little bit more willing to turn the mirror on ourselves. And of course, when I say ourselves, I mean on the Democrats. They're the people who are doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing it with the same type of pretext.
They
use this exact same rationale.
Trumped up charges about whatever, right? You don't agree with the government. Oops. You know, and again, you know, we were talking about Simone Gold going to jail for 60 days for doing absolutely nada. Nada.
I mean,
zero.
Simone Gold is a COVID skeptic, and she goes down to Washington, D.C. In fact, she's supposed to give a speech at the Capitol. And then there's all this turmoil, and people are pushing toward the Capitol, and she's sort of carried with the crowd. And then again, she sees cops there. She sees the doors open. She walks in. She's very careful not to go across the barricade. Mm-hmm. She doesn't deface any property. She's in there for a few minutes. I think at one point she tries to give her speech.
Yeah, it really is, you know, we're talking about one of our Marines, one of our own in Venezuela, incarcerated with no due process, but we have many here incarcerated with no due process. So we have to kind of put that in there because I know that our listeners are going to say, hey, what about us? And so, you know, it's horrific. Our prayers are with the Heath family. And I think we're going to have her on the show next week. But we also, you know, have to know that that this is an unfortunate thing that is happening in two very different countries. One that is supposed to be the land of the free and the home of the brave, and it's not.
This would be seen in the past as a problem that has to do with our foreign policy. But now we see how our foreign policy and our domestic situation in the country are linked. And in fact, when you have a regime like the Biden regime, and regime is not an inappropriate word here because we're dealing, I mean, leave aside 2,000 mules and the question of whether Biden is in a junta, but they act like a regime. They don't respect their political opposition. They treat congressmen and senators on the other side as potential domestic terrorists and traitors. I mean, this is the kind of rhetoric that is leading the country into, I would say, a breakdown of civil order. Mm. And we're not all that far away from that happening. The Democrats are sort of tauntingly, they may even wish it to happen.
Yeah. No, I mean, the nightmare that I've been living with from my family, a Venezuelan nightmare, I think it's come to America.
Yeah, it's certainly come to some places in America. It's certainly to some degree being pushed by the current government in America. And only bad things are in store if this course isn't corrected. Now, the American people might be awake to all this. I think they are. And there might be a big tsunami coming in November. That would help. But what also help would be for Republicans to recognize that they need to do things, not merely be elected, not merely sit Buddha-like and wait for time to pass, but to actively resist the other side and actively prevent these kinds of outrages from taking place. Biden has been tweeting about all the various things that he's doing to deal with the gas price problem. And Debbie has just been laughing and shaking her head, and she doesn't even quite know what to make of it. So let's read Biden's latest statement.
Oh, yeah. So he does a tweet. It says, "I'm doing everything I can to blunt the Putin price hike and bring down costs of gas and food."
Putin price hike.
Yeah.
So Putin decides prices worldwide.
Yeah, yeah.
No, who decided to stop buying Russian oil? Biden.
Yes.
Right? So you decide, I'm not going to buy your oil. You're imposing a price hike on me.
Yeah. No, and I mean,
madness.
I mean, the fact, you know, that you said in yesterday's podcast that he basically declared a war on fossil fuels, on oil, here in our own land. And so because of that, you know, we're oil independent. We don't need Russia. We don't need Iran. We don't need OPEC. So he declares a war. And then, like I told you, it's exactly like the water commissioner, right, that poisons the water well and then comes back and goes, oh, I've got to fix this water well.
I've got a plan. Let's read some more about his plan. I led the world. Biden led the world. The world is listening. What is Biden saying? We're going to follow. Okay. To coordinate the largest release from global oil reserves in history. This is a false statement right here. Biden is making a trip, actually hat in hand, to the Middle Eastern countries to try to persuade them. Now, he's been annoying them and antagonizing them and treating Saudi Arabia as a pariah state. So all those guys hate him. In fact, they think he's a fraud. And some of them think he stole the election. So they're all going to be... So here you have Mohammed bin Sultan, MBS. These are very powerful people. And Biden is going to go there and basically say, I'm not going to back down from my comments about you, but I want you to release some oil reserves. I think they've been telling him to take a hike so far, and they're likely to continue with that message. So here you have this pathetic, bumbling fool who somehow thinks he's leading the world. The world is laughing at him. And so all he's doing is trying to deflect blame. It's a Putin price hike.
This is actually their MO. They're always blaming someone. Always. They blame Putin. Remember the Russia collusion that wasn't? I mean, they blame Russia, right? And it was fake, right?
Now, listen to this.
So,
hold on. I want to chuckle about this one. I'm working to get 20 million tons of grain out of Ukraine to help bring down prices. First of all, think of it. You're growing stuff in the Ukraine. Ukraine desperately needs money. We've been actually just filtering money over to the Ukraine. So first of all, we're giving away all this money, right? Then what we do is we buy, probably at mini bar prices, this Ukrainian food. Then we have to ship it all the way from Ukraine. This is not stuff that's coming right across the border from Mexico. We're bringing stuff by ship from Ukraine. How is that going to lower the prices of food? In fact, if anything, it's going to drive up the price of food. So here's Biden acting like he's deftly, you know, killing two birds with one stone. He's helping the Ukraine. He's lowering food prices.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be, I think it was Putin himself, and I don't like to quote Putin, but he's like, he's talking about Biden and he goes, he's listening to Biden and he goes, is this intended for Americans who don't know how to read or write? And this is Putin being sarcastic, but what he's saying is that how stupid do you have to be?
Yeah, well, I mean, whoever voted for him, for Biden.
Yeah, and ironically, the people who voted for Biden weren't just dummies. They were also members of the American elite who do know how to read and write, but who have lost all sense of balance, who have lost their intellectual ability to assess a situation, who say nonsensical things
and
like printing money has nothing to do with inflation, or blocking gas leases has nothing to do with rising gas prices. And so you have, it's not just Biden. There's a deranged group around Biden that is producing Bidenism.
That and their absolute blind hatred of Trump. You know, that drove them to do this.
Yeah, it's if Trump does X, they do the opposite.
Yes.
So Biden signed a bunch of executive orders. And frankly, if he wants to lower gas prices, rescind all those executive orders and you'll see how that happens pretty quickly.
Yeah, but he won't because he listens to the other loonies who claim that that all of the oil is ruining our country and everything.
Hey, let's talk about Andrew Gillum. This is the guy who almost became the governor of Florida. Think about it. You almost had Gillum and not DeSantis running Florida. He's just been indicted 21 felonies for what? Basically for stealing. What he's done is he took money from his own campaign and he set up all these bogus entities and he partnered with another guy and he would essentially funnel the money to that guy. He's apparently he's been robbing from Soros because Soros put money into his campaign and this guy said, I'll spend it on myself. He's robbing from liberal nonprofits.
Wait, isn't he also a drug addict?
Oh, no. He was found face down, in a drug den.
He's a bad guy. But so let's talk about this because people are going to go, well, Dinesh, you know, you're talking about campaign finance fraud. And what about you, Dinesh?
Yeah, well, my case didn't involve fraud.
Right.
It also didn't involve what's sometimes called the quid pro quo. In other words, if you give money to a campaign and you stand to gain something out of it, that's the corruption. That's the quid pro quo. Hey, listen, I'll get seven other donors to donate to you and I'll reimburse them. But my real goal is to get you to give a tax break to my company or appoint me to a position as a judge. Now, none of this is involved in my case. It wasn't even alleged.
She didn't even know you were giving
She didn't even know I was giving the money. So the difference between me and Andrew Gillum, well, there's a huge difference.
And it was
but
your own
is
money.
I was giving too much of my own money. What Andrew Gillum is doing, this is more the Democratic MO, is taking money that's supposed to be public money for a campaign and stealing it for his own private benefit. And yet, many of the same people who are like shrieking about it, Dinesh, you're a felon, Dinesh this, Dinesh that, dead silent about Andrew Gillum. Why? Because the crook is on their side and he's a far worse crook and he does something that I wouldn't dream of doing, which is stealing from the public purse and using it for your own private benefit.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify, or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
with in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.